is. So thank you for your attention. I hope you enjoy the interview. And would you please give the upstairs at the White Horse welcome for AJ Leon. So AJ, I know you are here as part of the Worldwide Odyssey, promoting, connecting, delivering your new and forthcoming book. But I'd like to start at the beginning, if you don't mind.
I was born in 19.
So, can you tell me what exactly was going on in December 2007?
Yeah, I mean, basically, what happened in December, and I'll explain just a little bit. I had gone to university, and I did basically everything you're supposed to do. Early on, I had a high school guidance counselor. Right as I was choosing my degrees and deciding whether to go to university or not, she told me that a guy like me can't go to university. That I should be a mechanic. Nothing against mechanics, but that was obviously not the thing you want to hear from your high school guidance counselor. Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. You're great. And so from that moment on, I dedicated myself to proving that bitch wrong, you know? Fuck you, Ms. Mitchell. I mean, true story, for the first four semesters in school, I mailed my report cards to this woman. I was so vitriolic against this, you know, just remembering.
We can send her a copy of this video.
I mean, we could all just raise a glass and this report card and go fuck herself. I wonder if she's still telling people that they can't make, you know, to problem kid. But yeah, that was a transformative experience for me in the sense that, I mean, I had a lot of people tell me what I can and cannot do when I was younger, and that was one of the last straws. So when I went to university, I studied really hard. I graduated with 3 degrees, summa cum laude, top of my class in 3 years, and I was hell-bent on being successful and proving everybody that had ever told me that I wouldn't amount to anything wrong. Which led me to a path. I mean, how do you quantify success? You know? I mean, the easiest measure is money. Mm-hmm. So when I was selecting what degrees that I would study, I was actually at a Barnes & Noble with Melissa, and I was flipping through this book that had all these degrees listed out and based on income potential over time. So I actually selected what I would study. Yeah, as a kid, I mean, what the fuck do you know when you're 18 anyway, you know? But I was basically selecting because of this up into the right lines that I saw, trying to prove everybody wrong. So that's what I did. And by the end of my studies, I graduated at the top of my class. I took the largest offer from the biggest firm that gave me a letter. With the highest signing bonus. I didn't care where the fuck I'd be working or who I'd be working for or what I'd be doing. All I cared about was the amount of money I'd be making and what track that would lead me on. That led me in my 20s to getting really, really good at this game in New York of vertical leaps. And vertical leaps are, anybody in the corporate world at any level knows them. I mean, you basically, you know, you leave one job to the next, extracting the greatest value from one to the next leap up the ladder. You know, I mean, it's a great, you kind of time it out right, so you get the greatest signing bonus, you kind of leverage your position you just got and kind of that sale that you just made. I did that several times. It culminated to the fact that I was, you know, in my mid-20s, corner office in Manhattan, managing $10 billion in assets. You know, healthy six-figure salary and a bigger bonus, and there was only one tiny little problem that I hated my fucking life and everything I stood for, you know, and I had always hated it. I despised myself, you know, and I hated myself more for I mean, every passing day, for trading the hours of my one and only life away for more money at every turn. There's something about that that just, it grated at me, even though I did it really well.
Yeah.
So on December 31st in 2007, my boss calls me into his office, and, you know, I walk down the hall, and I go into the dude's office, and he sits me down, and he tells me, AJ, you're getting a promotion. You know, basically that means I'm going to be on the partner track, which in New York terms, that means you are minted, you know, you're like, you're fine. And obviously that was going to come with an even more significant raise and all that stuff. So I kind of took that in. I was like, wow, you know, like that's everything that I'd ever worked for. And I walked out of his office and into mine, I closed the door, and I just remember I stood behind my office staring out over the Manhattan skyline, and I just started to cry because I realized that I was trapped, you know? I mean, we have this interesting relationship with money as humans, because even though we created it, it owns us. And the more money that you make, the harder it is to walk away from whatever the fuck it is you're doing. And that, for me, it was the lowest of the low moments of my existence up until that point, because I recognized that I would never be able to walk away, and I saw this vision of myself as a 70-year-old man looking back at me at that moment, mourning the glory of a life that could have been. You know, I always wanted to be an adventurer. I always wanted to do work that matters. I always had these ideas that I would go out and change the world in some way. But I knew that, those ideas and those thoughts had died right at that moment.
Was it that gave you that extra ounce of energy to make the decision you made then?
Because it occurred to me, I mean, at that point, it was like all was lost, and I saw this script that had been written that I didn't like, but that was a script of my life, and I was going to be like the rich, fat, white guys that I made money for. You know, that was me. And then it occurred to me that maybe I had a choice. You know, that if I could walk away right then and there, and that if I didn't, I was going to be that guy for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that struck me. I mean, that was the first time in my entire life that I actually, it hit me, truly kind of permeated who I was, that this is my life, and it is my one and only, and I cannot live it at the behest of other people, what other people's idea of success is, or what my idea of success was based on projections of society, mm-hmm. and well-intentioned friends and family and all that. So the prospect of seeing your life scripted out, a life that you don't want,
right.
scripted out perfectly, was more terrifying to me than the prospect of how the hell I was going to pay rent in the next month. So. At that point, I did the only thing that I could do, and I grabbed my shit, and I walked out the door, and I told my boss I was taking off, and I took 28 stories down, and I hit the street, and that was it.
Now, you had a relatively important occasion coming
up.
What was that exactly?
Yeah, well, it was 4 days before my wedding.
Tell me about that kind of news.
Yeah, I mean, it was, that kind of played into it too, you know, that was one of the things where I was like, you know, this promotion and getting married and all these things that were culminating that just led to this kind of very scripted life, and when I just took off, and it was a very poignant moment, you know, it was a moment when I just thought to myself, I gotta get the fuck out, I'm living some other guy's life, what am I doing here? And when I took off and I hit the street, obviously my first call was, at first it was like, woo, like, I'm free.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh shit, I'm getting married in 4 days. Where's my big phone? And I called Melissa, and immediately, and she was with her mom doing wedding stuff, which was great. She was like driving around with her mom doing wedding stuff. Her mom and I still don't talk to this day. she's a lovely woman. I'll never forget what she said to me. She said, I'd rather live with the real you under the Brooklyn Bridge than an impersonation of you anywhere else. And that was probably the most accurate statement, because it, well, I was an impersonation of myself. You know, I wasn't me. You know, I was acting like some character that I never wanted to be. You know, trying to prove everybody else wrong.
So when you, presumably you get through, you know, your wedding and all that wonderful period, what was your sense at that point about what was coming next?
Yeah, no, it was mortifying. It wasn't so lovely. It was like, it was great, but it was like, oh shit, the whole time I'm just thinking, you know, because we paid for the wedding and the honeymoon of this rich banker, and then I was just some unemployed asshole in New York, you know? So it was a terrifying moment. On my honeymoon, Melissa, like, that was the time when I was like, oh, wow, I gotta figure things out. I'd never been an entrepreneur in my life, so I started, not a real one, you know, so I started kind of sketching out the things that I could do to start a business. And, you know, I mean, at first, honestly, I made a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make, which is I thought that my past would dictate my future.
Sure.
So I ended up looking, you know, what was my work history and education history and career history, blah, blah, blah. And I set up this management consulting firm. And I got a few clients very quickly. And I recognized, it was about 2 or 3 months ago, that I amassed, like after our wedding, honeymoon, we got back, and I amassed these clients. And I'm just sitting there in this client meeting with a guy. You know, he's talking to me about his risk exposure, his tax liability, and I kind of zoned out, and I was, you know, like, while he's talking to me about it, I should care.
Yeah.
And then I just caught myself, and I'm like, I thought to myself, you know, and he kept on rambling, like, why the fuck don't I want to be here right now? You know, I just escaped. I spent 5, 6 years of my life in prison. And I had escaped, you know? I mean, I should be jubilant to be in that situation right then. And then it occurred to me that I fucking hated that guy, you know? And I hated all my clients, and I hated my work history. I hated everything that I had ever done.
Okay.
And that was when I recognized that it wasn't just about entrepreneurship. It wasn't just, a lot of entrepreneurs make that kind of incoherent leap where it's, you know, I just want to escape the prison office the prison sentence of being in an office every day.
Sure.
When in reality, a lot of times you can end up creating your own prison, except this time it's locked from the inside and you're holding the key.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what I had done. So.
So how did you navigate out of that?
I mean, I ended up firing the asshole client and the other clients, and I just kept the one that, you know, that I could pallet. You know, I started. We went through this period of deep reflection and basically reinventing life, you know. We approached, and I started to approach my life like, what if I could start from scratch?
Sure.
You know, what if history didn't matter? What if all these things that happened when I was a kid, and everything that I'd studied, nothing mattered, what would I do? And when that's your playing field, no matter what age you are in life, when you really consider, like, what if I could start from scratch right, like, today, this moment, you start to, things come out of you that, you know, weren't there before, you know, or that were there, but you were making contrary decisions. For instance, if I want to travel the world, I can't start a restaurant. You know, the two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
So we started writing all these things down. Some of it was that we wanted to work together. She's an educator. I was a Wall Street douchebag, so that was really no convergence there. But we wanted to do that. We wanted to do stuff on the web. I had always been an artistic. I'd always been a closet designer, and I had always drawn and sketched since I was a kid. I mean, I'd always been an artist, but I was told, you know, you can't make money with your art. So I tucked that away. So I brought that back out, and I wanted to do something with that. We wanted to travel the world. We wanted to travel at least 50% of the time. We wanted to work on social and humanitarian projects with 20% of our time. All these very specific things. And we wrote them on this yellow pad. And at the time, it sounded ludicrous because we weren't doing any of those, not even within a million miles of any of those things. But we forced ourselves to go through this exercise. And then we looked at ourselves, and we promised ourselves that we wouldn't wait, and that we would use this list as a filter for every decision we would make that day forward. no matter how excruciating. Yeah. And that's what we did. So.
And do you still refer to that filter now, or has it evolved?
No, yeah, we absolutely do. Yeah.
So tell us a wee bit about the, you've kind of given us a hint there, but all the different projects that are, let's say, ongoing right now, or have happened in recent times, because you literally do travel the world.
Yeah.
So give us a sense of what's going on for you right now.
Sure. I mean, it's from that moment, and there was a lot of tumultuous times between then and today, but from the moment that I started to think of myself, you know, my life as a novel and myself as a protagonist in this grand adventure, we started all types of things. You know, one is Misfit, our creative agency, which has done extraordinarily well. I mean, it started with me and Melissa's backpacker, like gypsy vagabond fucking backpackers, basically bartering web design for our old bagels and stale coffee. It was glorious, though, I'll tell you what. It got us through some dark days. And that evolved over time. We cut our teeth in a lot of different projects, and that's evolved. Now we also have Good Misfit, which is our humanitarian arm, basically a nonprofit firm. We've raised, I mean, at this point, probably close to $5 million in different humanitarian charity, but all using the real-time web to tell stories from the ground. So, like, to give you an example, last summer we were in Malawi, and we used Instagram as this platform, kind of metaphor for real-time storytelling from the ground in these two villages in Malawi, and ended up raising $4 million through this campaign with WaterAid that we did.
How do you identify those projects? I mean, of all
the humanitarian.
Of all the potential causes out there.
I mean,
figure out which ones are
early on. It was just, you know, people we met, you know, because we just wanted to. You know, when you decide that you want to change the world, then all of a sudden your eyes are open. You meet all these people that are doing amazing things that just need a little bit of help, and sometimes it's help that you can provide. And we just started aligning ourselves, you know, over time. Now, like, you know, when you say that you do free work, obviously, you know, like a lot of NGOs are like, can we, so now we vet basically NGOs and nonprofits based on kind of their ability or desire to want to do something risky or experimental, because everything we do is very experimental in the field, and it usually is based on, we've done projects in Kenya, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Malawi, and a few other sub-Saharan African countries, and it's usually us creating a campaign that is based on the real-time web, and us going on the ground and teaching people that are local to tell stories real-time from the ground, and creating a campaign around that, which a lot of nonprofits can't handle just because it's too crazy, you know, there's no PR filter to it.
The lack of control.
Yeah.
So you're painting this picture of traveling all these places with Melissa, but also working with Melissa. So how does that kind of, Melissa, we'll allow you to ask a question. how does that?
Well, Melissa's my boss, so she chose this jacket today. People ask us that all the time. I mean, our friends think we're fucking crazy that we, you know, that we work together, we travel together, we spend all day together and all that. We've known each other since we were kids, so we have that kind of unique history in the sense that we've known each other since we were 16 years old. So she saw me go through this period where I was chasing something that wasn't me, which is a departure from who I am. You know what I mean? So, like, she saw that, and for her, it was like a return back. We've gone through the woods together. We've seen so many things together. Mm-hmm. So, for us, it's kind of natural to do that and to work together. And I couldn't imagine any other way, you know?
That's really cool.
You know, you hear so many horror stories about business partnerships and stuff like that. When you're in the foxhole with somebody that you trust, like 100%, and that you've slept under bus benches in Victoria train station with, you know, like, I mean, it's
by preference, presumably,
right? Yeah, exactly, by choice.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
There's this sense of just visceral loyalty where you know that person has your back, and it works. You know?
It sounds like that's an important characteristic, a human characteristic, to you. just that sense of loyalty. I just pick it up in a lot of the